Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jason Kelly.
And I'm Mike Lynch.
And I'm Michael Barr. And this is the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports.
All right. We are psyched today, to use a technical term. We've got John Wertheim with us, executive editor of Sports Illustrated. He often joins us at the U.S. Open. He's a senior writer at the magazine. He's also got a new book, which is incredible. Glory Days, the summer of 1984 and the 90 days that changed sports and culture forever. It's on sale now. John, great to have you with us. All right, let's jump right in, because this is one of those times and candidly one of those conceits where you're like, yeah, that did happen. It's just incredible. I mean, since we are talking about business, the sports business changed so fundamentally that year. And I'm thinking especially about ESPN. I'm thinking about Jordan coming on the scene. As you look back on it, do you agree sort of the economic landscape changed for sports then too?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's that was the big change this summer. And it wasn't this sort of a moment of social activism, or it wasn't one of these moments that everyone can pinpoint. But you look back, and this was the summer of Jordan, where he and his agent said, wait a second, I've got a lot of value here and companies want to align with me. Never mind what I make from my NBA contract. I can make a lot more money by endorsing products, starting with a signature tennis shoe. I don't just want to be on a poster. I want my own shoe. That same summer, you had really the rise of cable. ESPN was sold to ABC, and cable was really, people were realizing this was a force that was going to be here for a long, long time. You had, you know, Vince McMahon and David Stern, and this was really, you know, some of this was in keeping, you know, this was in keeping with the Reagan 80s and the free market and, yeah, and deregulation. And this was sort of the summer sports said, you know what, we're not a mom and pop industry. This is big business. This is big media. This is big tech.
See, I said I was not going to mention that in 84, the Detroit Tigers won the World Series. So I'm not going to mention that part.
Right.
What I am going to talk about is that era, you saw a lot of the old school players that we used to grow up with was starting to be phased out. And here comes that new era coming in. I guess that was a big moment in the shift in how we viewed sports, out with the old and in with the new.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, again, this was Jordan is kind of the centerpiece of the book, but we had a new look Olympics. And we had, again, we had this new look NBA commissioner, David Stern, a few weeks on the job. And he's sort of saying, you know, enough with the Dr. J model. We've got to align ourselves with youth and with globalization and with cable. We had Vince McMahon say, you know what, enough of these regional wrestling promotions. We need to consolidate all this. And sports really looked a lot different. You know, it sounds crazy to say it, but I mean, sports looked a lot different on Labor Day than it did on Memorial Day. And this was the summer that, again, there was this sort of awakening, like you said. I mean, the old way of doing business is cute and quaint, and everybody has nostalgia for sort of the small world, 80s sports, but there's a lot of value that hasn't been unlocked that we're going to unlock. That really came about that summer of 84.
Hey, John, it's Mike Lynch up in Boston. I had a front row seat to a lot of these events you wrote about, and they have great memories. Was there one seismic event from the summer of 84 that we're still feeling the aftershocks from?
That's a great question. And I think there are a lot of them. I mean, the big one is Jordan, I think, who, and I don't think he gets enough credit for this. I mean, we all still talk about what he did as a player and six rings and is he better than LeBron? What people forget is what the athlete in a team sport looked like before Michael Jordan, and what he did to athlete empowerment, to athlete economics, to leverage that talent has. I think he still hasn't gotten his full due. And the other thing that just became clear to me was cable completely changed sports. Mm-hmm. And in the summer of 84, ESPN said, you know, wait a second. Why are we paying to get on these cable systems? No one wants cable if it doesn't have ESPN. We're the ones that bring value. We need to get a subscriber fee. We need to get money from the cable systems, completely turning the model on its head. And it started out as a few pennies a month. Right now, it's something like $7 a month. And the billions and billions and billions of dollars that ESPN got from these subscriber fees, that is what has enabled them to pay rights fees, which has made athletes wealthier. I mean, the cable has really done more than any force, I would argue, to prop up where sports are today. And cable really came of age that summer of 84.
John, talk to us about the Olympics, because those 84 games were critical, as you write in the book. You know, we're on the verge of a, we think, delayed Tokyo Olympics now. The Olympic movement certainly has had some fits and starts and some twists and turns between then and now. But what did 84 mean, and what does it portend for the Olympic movement?
In 72, you had the terrorist attack mar the games in Munich. In 76, you had these wildly expensive overruns in Montreal that took decades for Montreal and Canada to pay off. In 80, you had a boycott. By 84, Newsweek had a cover story: are the games dead?
Yeah.
I mean, there were thoughts that this might be the last Summer Olympics. And the LA Games and Peter Uberoff took this struggling, sort of this sputtering Olympic movement. And they probably benefited from the fact that there was a Soviet boycott. They had all of these sponsors. I mean, people of a certain age, like myself, still remember watching because you got free Big Macs and fries whenever Americans got medals.
Right.
You had sponsorships. You had network revenue. You had no drama, no terrorism. I mean, the games were remarkably smooth. And the summer of 84... the games had a surplus of more than $250 million in 1984 dollars. So economically, they were successful. It was feel good. It was a ratings bonanza. It was the most watched programming in U.S. TV history at the time. And the Olympics really got this second wind from the L.A. Games. And, we remember it for, Mary Lou Retton, Carl Lewis, Jordan. But the real hero of those Olympics was Peter Uberoff.
You're talking to an auto racing nut, and you're talking about cable. And auto racing exploded thanks to ESPN. 1979, the Daytona 500, CBS, they went flag to flag. That's the first time that's ever happened live. And then all of a sudden, in 84, and in that era, ESPN picks up all these other NASCAR races, North Wilkesboro, Richmond, all the other stuff. And all of a sudden, NASCAR fans, racing fans in general, like, hey, this is like gold to us.
You know, ESPN, before it had the money to spend on NFL rights and on college basketball rights, it, broadcast the America's Cup sailing. It was way into auto racing. It had Australian rules football. And so while ESPN was gathering steam and gathering subscribers and trying to sort of get its balance sheets in order, ESPN did a ton to help these niche sports. And I think that's part of ESPN that doesn't get told enough, that while this network was getting its finances in order and while they were trying to, ESPN was bleeding money for the first 5 years, really until 1984. But while it was bleeding money, it did so much to help popularize and prop up all these other sports while they were, getting the war chest ready to start bidding on the NFL.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for the Future Investor Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/FutureInvestor/radio.
Hey, John, another Boston story up here. The Michael Jackson tour that summer, which was financed by Chuck Sullivan, the son of Billy Sullivan, who owned the Patriots, was really the start of the current success of the New England Patriots due to the failure. And it's hard to believe that anybody could lose money on a Michael Jackson tour, but the Sullivan family found a way to do so. And that still has a long tail, which is still wagging today.
I'm curious whether I kind of sort of knew this story, but I didn't know all the details. I mean, to me, this was one of the great sort of sports yarns, that Michael Jackson is the most popular performer in the world. He's coming off a Thriller, and his parents basically say, you know what, you need to make the whole family rich. So The Jackson family does the victory tour. Don King somehow insinuates himself and is the promoter. Michael Jackson doesn't really want to be on this tour with his siblings. They squabble. It loses money. There are all these cost overruns. There are, you know, hundreds of dancers, and the set is the size of a football field. And basically, it's a big money loser as a concert tour. And the guy who's financed it is Chuck Sullivan, who owned the family owned the New England Patriots. They collateralized the tour with Sullivan Stadium. Basically, the tour loses so much money that the Sullivans have to sell the Patriots. And through a bunch of twists and turns, it ends up with Bob Kraft. And I don't think it's a total stretch to say the Patriots dynasty may never have happened if Michael Jackson's victory tour had been more of a success.
I mean, it is amazing to think about it. And, you know, it brings us to, I think, one of the most fascinating sort of elements of this book, that while it is a sports book in some ways, and you are the executive editor of Sports Illustrated, this is really a book about the culture in many ways and the economic culture of 1984. And you alluded to it at the top of the conversation. You know, we're in the midst of the Reagan era, but sports become intertwined into our lives in a new and different way, it feels like, John, you know, beyond sort of just something we watch, but sort of integrate themselves into our, you know, our very beings, and certainly our economic beings. Is that something that you sort of found as you were going through this?
Absolutely. And again, it's sort of these forces of, well, you've got cable. Now you've got a network devoted entirely to sports. I don't have to wait till, you know, the game of the week or Monday Night Football. I can watch sports 24/7 on this new network called ESPN. And I think athletes were realizing just how much economic power they had. And if you're Michael Jordan and you're this young up-and-coming player and you're exciting and you just won a gold medal and you've got a big smile and you're in a big media market, there's a lot of money on the table that you can be making beyond the $560,000 that your rookie contract with the Bulls entitles you to.
So as we wrap up here, John, just one last thing. Got to ask you about tennis, because we get to visit with you often at the U.S. Open. Hopefully we'll get to do that again this year as the world reopens. You know, 1984 was a big year for tennis, but fast forward to 2021. What's the state of tennis as you look at it? We're coming out of the French Open now. We're looking ahead to Wimbledon and the U.S. Open. It feels like we're at a pretty seminal moment in the game across both the men's and the women's game.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, you know, tennis is like this global business that is not killing it in the U.S. right now, but I think it's pretty healthy globally. It's a strange time in the sense that you have these four absolutely dominant players. I mean, think about this. There are 40 majors played every year. I mean, every decade, right? Four a year. And Djokovic has 19. Nadal has 20. Federer has 20. Serena Williams has 23. So you've got more than 80 major titles among four players.
Wow.
And they're not going to play forever. And I think tennis is sort of, you know, celebrate these four titans, but I think there's also a bit of, like, what do we do for an encore? So it's a transition time for tennis. You know, it's very well positioned globally. I mean, Naomi Osaka is the highest paid female athlete in the world. You know, Roger Federer makes more than $100 million all in. So in some ways it's very healthy, but I do think it's got to figure out, it's a global sport. It's played everywhere. The days of one country dominating are over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very different than it was in 1984 when you had all these Americans. But I do think the big challenge for tennis is, what are we going to do when these four stars finally exit the stage?
Yeah, well, a big question. We know we'll be talking to you as that story goes on. In the meantime, congratulations on the book. It's terrific. Glory Days, The Summer of 1984, and The 90 Days That Changed Sports and Culture Forever. The author, of course, John Wertheim. He's the executive editor of Sports Illustrated and a senior writer. One of the most prolific guys out there. Also, follow him on Twitter. He's terrific to get the zeitgeist of what's going on. John, really, really good to catch up with you, and congrats on the book.
Thanks again, and we'll see you guys at the U.S. Open.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Right. Thanks, John.
Thank you, John. This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast. I'm Michael Barr on Twitter at Big Barr Sports.
And I'm Mike Lynch. You can follow me at Lynchy WCBB.
And I'm Jason Kelly. Find me at Jason Kelly News. We're here each and every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday talking about the world of money and sports. Join us again at the end of the week. We're going to catch up with Pete Bevacqua. He is the chairman of the NBC Sports Group.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports on Bloomberg Radio around the world and online wherever you get your podcasts.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for the Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.